Prospectus for the Great Work, written sometime in 1985 or 1986 as an introduction to the revision of the course. And the course was given between Monday, October 4th, 1982, and Monday, July 4th, 1983. So about a year and a half after the first course was completed, with students attending in Santa Fe and others receiving the written material by mail on the East Coast and the West Coast of the United States, I proceeded to revise the course into the form, the written form that survives today. I have no copy in my records of the original version of the course. And to introduce the revised version, I composed a small document in the form of a 5-page prospectus. Now, there does exist an earlier prospectus, which I wrote in Taos, New Mexico, in the summer of 1982. That is the prospectus that I handed out to students in September of 1982, prior to starting the course on October 4th. And so I might have a copy of that earlier prospectus in the Ambergane archives, but I don't have a copy of the course, as it was called, in its first draft or first form. In any case, I have here the prospectus of the revised course, which I shall now proceed to read. The date of this recording, by the way, is March 1st, 2014. It's about 1 a.m. here in Spain. This is day 29 of the Matangi shift of 2014, with the new moon in 11 degrees of Pisces, that is to say, in the center of the body of the Manitou. The Great Work. The idea of the magnum opus, or Great Work, is essential to the Western spiritual tradition. Nevertheless, it has not been clearly explained and adapted to modern terms. What, after all, is the Great Work? Alchemy provides the answer in the form of a riddle, or a whole set of riddles, carefully translated by John Lash during 20 years of research and experimentation. His book, now being revised for publication in the United States, reviews and redevelops the ancient wisdom of Hermetics in an entirely new perspective. His interpretation is supported by extensive links to comparative mythology, the history of religions, and the natural sciences. It is the result of a vast synthesis. This is alchemy reborn, reincarnated for modern times and modern minds. In short, the Great Work is the task of co-creation, service rendered to nature by humanity, as a way of completing the very process of creation. Obviously, it will be impossible to pursue the task of assisting nature if we do not encounter nature, the created world, in a profound way. To revise alchemy in modern terms, we must contact nature as an awesome power. The Great Work is a program and guide to such an encounter. The author shares his discovery that the alchemists were, quote, atmospheric mystics, unquote, who experienced in a direct way how our mental and physical life is interfused with the processes of the terrestrial atmosphere. For example, they recognized the cycle of photosynthesis before it was technically identified. They knew, as sensory fact, the exchange of carbon dioxide between humans and plants. They considered the entire atmosphere as a vas hermeticum, a vessel where transmutations occur all the time. They sought to understand the role of the human form as a living spore, in quotes, embedded within the atmospheric medium. In this unique view, the alchemists can be taken as the true forerunners of the ecology movement. In fact, since John Lash originally presented the great work in 1981, a new field called eco-psychology has emerged in America. This term is obviously perfect to describe what he accomplished. Tam ethici quam physici. Moral as much as physical is the alchemical principle that everything which happens physically within the Earth's atmosphere has its moral equivalent in human nature. This revision of alchemy does not require a forge and apparati, the cooking of chemicals or working in a laboratory. But it does require the capacity to experience the entire atmosphere around us as a laboratory. It also requires the training of imagination to see how we are involved in the dynamics of the atmosphere. Among the alchemists, the power of imagination was called the artifex, the tool for achieving the work. The great work might be described as a synthesis of cosmology and medicine. Its medical aspect reveals for the first time the true basis of homeopathy. The author explains that Samuel Hahnemann derived his concept of homeopathic medicine from alchemical teachings regarding the magnificatio, the exponential effect of the infinite dose. He also develops the parallels between hermetics, Einsteinian physics, mind-body disciplines, and the latest atmospheric studies. In its revised form, the great work will serve as the key work of eco-psychology for the coming century. John Lash originally presented this work on alchemy as a 40-week course extending from fall 1982 to summer 1983. It was attended by 18 students in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and another 14 elsewhere in the USA and England. The course, as it was originally called, was the result of investigations that began at the age of 9, inspired by his dreams and certain clues that came to him. It's amazing that a young boy living in the fishing village of 900 souls would find himself deeply engaged in the arcane subject of alchemy. But this is how it began. For years he studied the development of physics and the natural sciences with the intention of seeing how they were inadequate. Slowly he realized that the alchemists were not quacks, quote, mere fools who preceded the appearance of genuine science. In many cases, they knew what science knows today, but more deeply, more intimately, and they expressed their knowledge in a witty, sophisticated language. The author finally saw that alchemy was a code describing the interaction between human life and the ensemble of atmospheric workings. He discovered to his own amazement, quote, the secret of the philosophers, end quote, how they impart their vital forces to the atmosphere, where they are converted into currents that come to operate with effects equivalent to the laws of nature. Alchemy, as he understands it, is the making of supernature from the human effect in the natural world. For revision, John Lash will condense and refine his original text, a manuscript of 540 single-space pages. He will also incorporate the latest findings of atmospheric science and ecological studies, especially the work of the last 12 years since the course was written. Revision and updating will require him to use alchemical libraries in Amsterdam and Edinburgh, as well as visit centers for atmospheric studies in Brussels and in Boulder, Colorado, USA. Time required for the revision will be about 1 year. The great work is both the retrieval of lost knowledge from the past and the opening of a way into the future. It initiates a path into the age when we can live as conscious caretakers of the biosphere and share in the mysterious dynamics of the air we breathe. Well, there you have it. That is the content of this five-page document. And as you see, and as I myself see from reading it, it is not what I said it was at the beginning. In fact, it is not the prospectus for the revised course. Rather, it is a proposal for a book entitled The Great Work to be based upon the revised course. Okay. And since it says in the proposal that the course was written 12 years ago, so you add 12 to 1982, and I guess this book proposal was written sometime around 1994, which is curious, because I don't really remember where I was living when I did it, but I was already living in Europe by 1994. In any case, there are three documents that I may now bring to your attention. If luck is on my side, these three documents will be found in the same folder in the Ambergain archives. One is the first prospectus for the course, written in the summer of 1982. The second will be the prospectus for the revised course, which I mistook this document to be. And the third will be this document, and they all go together. Now, since I'm pulling documents together, looking forward to the way the divine alchemy of the Aeon Sophia might be investigated and implemented by some human animals in correction, while I'm undertaking this little project of recapitulation and synthesis for the handover, I may as well throw in another document. When I add this other document, which has fallen into my hands this evening, then I can see that these four documents go together. They ought to be archived together because they represent four stages in the development of Gaian alchemy, such that Gaian alchemy can be created, such that it can come into definition in Sophia's correction. Of course, at the time that I produced these four documents, I had no idea that I would be living up to the moment of Sophia's correction, which is to say about 3 weeks from this moment, this evening, today. So if I'm still here in 3 weeks, I would have arrived. I will have, to use the future perfect tense, I will have arrived at a moment that was in reality, in the process of my life, being prepared at several previous moments before I knew what was being prepared. Follow my drift? Well, this is the way life works with everybody. What's the big deal? No big deal, really, and I don't hold myself out as an exception, except to the extent that in this particular development, the Gaian alchemy that I am able to formulate and teach, I have a record of those definitive moments, which I am now passing on to anyone and everyone who cares to investigate it. Fourth document is called the Gaia Sapiens Exchange. Now, this document, which is 22 pages long, was written. No, I'm not going to use the passive voice. I wrote this document, which is 22 pages long, in May of the year 2000. Now, for those of you who have read Severed Rose, you may have some idea of the various mystical encounters of my life that led to the perception of the organic light in full cognitive illumination that allowed me to see that the organic light is the primary substance body of the Aeon Sophia. Now, I did not have that realization until the year 2002 here in Andalusia on Infinity Ridge. But in Arc, in the Languedoc of France, near Carcassonne, near Limoux, above Rennes-le-Château, in May of 2000, I was able to stabilize my perception of the organic light. And then, sometime like between two and three years later, I was able to identify the source of the organic light as being the Earth itself. Because the Aeon Sophia, who is composed entirely in her material nature as an aeon of currents of organic light, and because she is in material immanence with the planet, then I was able to perceive that she is the source of the organic light, the immediate local source. And I had that perception on Infinity Ridge, looking northwest toward the flanks of the Sierra de Libar Mountains. Sometime late in 2002 or in the spring of 2003. I guess if you want to carry the whole sequence forward from that point, you would factor in November of 2006. That was when Not in His Image was published. The dedication of Not in His Image is to the mystics of the future, and it cites a line from one of the amulets, the gold leaf amulets found at Petelia in southern Italy, dated to about 400 BC. It cites a line from one of those amulets, "A kid, thou hast fallen into milk." And so I guess you could say that the continuation of this entire sequence of documents culminates with Not in His Image, which appeared in the world at that time. And as you know, Not in His Image presents the disclosure of the ultimate initiation experience of the mysteries. And it explains the method of the mysteries, which is instruction by the light. So there's a sequence here from the time that I gave the course, 1982, 1992, 2002. So that's not bad. It's about 21 years from the time I gave the course until the identification of the organic light with the primordial substance body of the Aeon Sophia. That's not bad. And these documents represent moments, condensations of my intellectual and verbal realizations in that progression of 21 years. So I've never published the Gaia Sapiens Exchange so far, but I think the time is coming when I can put it on metahistory.org for the pleasure and edification of all concerned. Why not? There's no holding back in correction, and tantricas don't hold back anything anyway. You have to be the instrument and proof of an impossible and superhuman generosity even to get involved in what I'm talking about. So there we go. Something to look forward to. I am putting the MP3 file of this recording on guysfor.org, actually, with a PDF reproduction of the 5-page document. Somehow I feel inclined to do that. It would be my pleasure to do that. As for the Gaia Sapiens Exchange, it's a proto-terma. I think I've said that before, haven't I? It's a proto-terma inspired by that moment in Arc, France, when I was able to stabilize perception of the organic light, which was called in the medieval jargon of the alchemists, the philosopher's stone, the white stone, the stone of the wise, the Sophic hydrolith, and dozens of other names. So there you have it. Enjoy looking over that document. It has some illustrations from alchemical manuscripts in it. And it has the one quotation which deeply inspired me. I must have found it in Jung because I had no access to alchemical manuscripts in Latin. The only time I've been anywhere close to the source material of the alchemists was when I visited the Bibliotheca Hermetica in Amsterdam. The Bibliotheca Hermetica is a library and collection of rare books created by a Dutch millionaire industrialist. I can't remember his name. Herr Rittmann. Thank you, Herr Rittmann. And Herr Rittmann, in addition to creating that library where anyone can go and research into arcane and esoteric subjects such as the Kabbalah, Hermetics, Rosicrucianism, etc., in addition to that, Herr Rittmann was so rich that he created his own private collection of rare manuscripts, some of them going back to the 12th century. As a matter of fact, Herr Rittmann has a copy. It might, in fact, be the only copy of a version of the Grail story written by Robert de Boron in the early 13th century, I believe. That would make him a contemporary with Wolfram von Eschenbach and Gottfried von Strasbourg. And Robert de Boron was the first French writer who recounted the Grail legend, who specifically identifies the Grail, the Graal, with the chalice used by Joseph of Arimathea to collect the blood of Jesus when Jesus hung on the cross at Golgotha. So the manuscript of Robert de Boron is remarkable for that fact, that it melds and conflates, that is the correct word in scholarly terms, it conflates the mysterious power of the Grail with an actual religious relic or object, a cup or chalice. Unfortunately, that is what Robert de Boron did, and consequently misled many subsequent generations of people who were innately and intuitively guided by a mystical craving to encounter and achieve the attainment of the Grail. Well, they could not do so as long as they believed that it was a religious object or artifact in the form of a chalice, could they? In any case, Herr Rittmann had among his collection of rare manuscripts in Amsterdam the manuscript of Robert de Boron, written on vellum. And I had the opportunity to hold that manuscript in my hands and to touch it when I visited there one time and was received by his private secretary. Who knows why he even received me? It's another mystery of the cosmos. Anyway, that was a moving event, needless to say. But for me, something even more moving. The secretary showed me something even more moving took place in that visit to Amsterdam on a very, very rainy day. An October day, as I recall, when I walked past the Westkirche at some moment in the final decade of the 20th century without an umbrella. Anyway, Rittmann's secretary kindly offered to show me that there was a collection of alchemical notebooks that Rittmann had acquired. I guess I had talked to him. Oh, yeah, I was talking to him about the course. In fact, I was asking if they would sponsor the great work. That's what I went there, the revision of the course. I was asking if they would sponsor it, that I could turn the revised course into a book. So he showed me these, and he placed in my hands a little notebook, just from like the 17th century, you know, sometime around in the mid-1600s. And there was an original notebook, such as you and I might produce, with drawings and notes and a chronicle of events and experiments, that had actually been written by a practicing alchemist of that time. I can't recall who it was. I don't think that he told me who it was. I think it just came down. It survived miraculously, as some notebook that you and I might have written would survive 350, 400 years later, you know? So it was anonymous, but I smelled it, and I can tell you, it smelled pungent. It still had the smell on it of something. I don't know. It just smelled very strong. And some of the pages were blotted. You could see the ink had been inconsistent. Some of the ink was really dark. Some of it was lighter. The quality of the ink was uneven in some places. The ink was blurred by water stains. And there were little notes on the corners and little hand-drawn diagrams showing aspects of the alchemical process. I mean, wow. Little did I know at the time, I guess, what I know now. I can tell the world the difference between those two documents. Robert de Boron's misdirection and disinformation regarding the true nature of the Grail compared to this smelly, pungent alchemical notebook. That contrast will always, always remain in my mind. So, So these documents that I'm now collecting, as I take the next 2 months to pull together the handover at Ambergain House, will be in the same box. And there they are, as records for the future, however long the future may last. So I'll sign off for this little talk and probably take the rest of the evening to do nav briefing number 113, which delves into the subject of Gaian alchemy. Ha! Indeed it does. Sophianic alchemy. And what I can say about it now, and what I know about it now, what I live and breathe and feel today, and somatically, down into the marrow of my bones, I could never have anticipated anything so wonderful as this. And the thrill of experiencing it, well, is only matched by the thrill of sharing and imparting what I experience.